the less frequently heard alternate version of Better Get It In Your Soul by John Handy alto, Booker Irvin tenor, Jimmy Nepper trombone, Horace Parlan piano, Danny Richmond drums and bandleader Charles Mingus in 1959. Until next Saturday at 5, from me, Alan Shipton, goodbye.
The essay invites 5 people to share the story about the book that changed their lives.
From the day I opened its leather-bound covers, inhaled the scent of its thick pages, gazed at the fizz illustrations, read the opening paragraphs, life would never be the same again.
Former Home Secretary Alan Johnson tells of the deep emotional influence which Dickens's David Copperfield has had on his life.
I was 13 years old and had read lots of books, but nothing like this complex saga, so moving, so emotionally intertwined.
The Book That Changed Me, Monday night at 10:45 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 6 o'clock, and time now for Jazz Lineup, presented by Julian Joseph.
Hello. Welcome. On today's programme, an interview with author Richard Havers, investigating the influence and legacy of one of the greatest jazz labels, Verve Records, which has brought us unforgettable sounds like this.
Yeah, man. The way you hold tonight, the way we dance till three,
the way you change my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
No, they can't take that away from me.
And stay tuned for more musical magic from Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong in my interview with Richard Havers, looking at the legacy of Verve Records later on the show. Also on today's programme, previously unbroadcast concert music from Wayne Shorter and the BBC Concert Orchestra, Empirical, plus the European Jazz Orchestra. First, to get things started, here's a brand new release from British pianist and educator Peter Edwards. Peter's very much been a product of jazz education, in particular Gary Crosby's Tomorrow's Warriors, for which he's now a very prominent tutor. He attended Trinity College of Music and has been a player on the London jazz scene for a number of years. He played with the late Abram Wilson and also Dennis Baptiste, and has been making waves as he releases a new trio album. This is Triple Threat.
Thank you.
Pianist Peter Edwards and his trio, and that was Triple Threat from his new album Safe and Sound, released in the spring. Max Luthert was on bass and Moses Boyd was on drums. Incidentally, you may have caught Peter featured on Channel 4's 3-Minute Wonder series. Well, from one young British pianist to the definition of the talented British pianist, albeit from the previous generation, it's Jason Rebello, and he plays the Liverpool International Jazz Festival, which is in its second year. The festival runs from February 27th to March the 2nd, and you'll hear music from the piano maestro like this one, featuring the vocals of the gifted Jacob Collier. This is In the Thick of It.
Oh,
Pianist Jason Robello and In the Thick of It from his new album out on the Light Records label. The album is called Anything But Look and features a bevy of voices, including Jacob Collier, who collaborated on that track. And Jason will be opening the Liverpool International Jazz Festival on Thursday, the 27th of February. And right up until March the 2nd, you can hear the likes of Colin Towne's Blue Touch Paper and The Impossible Gentleman. Gwilym Simcock features with them and also with the current BBC New Generation jazz artist Trish Clues, who performs with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra at the Celtic Connections Festival in Glasgow. And from Trish Clues' latest album, this is Little Tune.
Thank you.
Trish Clues on tenor saxophone and Little Tune from her album And in the Nighttime She Is There. And Trish plays the Celtic Connections Festival, which is currently in full swing in Glasgow. And don't forget to listen to their concert broadcast live in concert on Radio 3 on Monday the 27th of January. And for more information on Trish's performance with Gwilym Simcock and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra at Celtic Connections, check the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. While you're there, you can also check out our collection of short films featuring Trish Clues in conversation with some of her musical heroes, including pianist Gareth Williams and trumpeter Nick Smart. And keeping orchestras to the fore, at the end of last year, Jazz Lineup broadcast a very special concert set featuring legendary saxophonist Wayne Shorter, and the BBC Concert Orchestra recorded at the 2013 London Jazz Festival, marking the saxophonist's 80th birthday. Here's a previously unbroadcast track from the set, recorded at the Barbican on November the 17th. This is Lotus.
Thank you.
The magnificent Wayne Shorter Quartet with the BBC Concert Orchestra conducted by Clark Rundell. Danilo Perez was on piano, John Patitucci bass, Brian Blade drums, and Wayne Shorter on soprano saxophone, playing the composition Lotus, recorded at the 2013 London Jazz Festival. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online, and on digital radio. Coming up next, an interview with author Richard Havers, who's written a very thorough and delightful account of the legendary jazz record label Verve. It's a gigantic book full of classic photos and quotes from jazz greats including Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald, through to Jimmy Smith and Nina Simone. Called Verve, The Sound of America, it's a homage to the music and geniuses chronicling the kaleidoscope of 20th century America to the present. Before I speak with Richard from the 1956 Verve classic Ella and Louie, this is They Can't Take That Away From Me.
The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that, no, they can't. Take that away from me, the way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on the bumpy road to love. Still I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you've changed. No, they can't take that away from me.
Bamba do 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 do, the way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on the bumpy road to love. Still I always, always keep the memory of us. The way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you change my life. No, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away from me. Swing it, boys.
Thank you.
change my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
No, they can't take that away from me.
Will you repeat that again, dearie, please?
No, they can't take that away from me.
Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong with the Oscar Peterson Quartet, and They Can't Take That Away From Me, from their seminal Verve release, Ella and Louis. And I'm very happy to say that Richard Havers joins me. Richard, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, what a massive undertaking this book is, and I think, like they said about the recent film 12 Years a Slave, it took a Brit to write this book.
Yeah, it's interesting that we have this different view. Maybe it's that prophet in his own land thing. Mm-hmm. The first book I ever did 13 years ago was Bill Wyman's Blues Odyssey, which was the story of the blues. And somebody said something very similar to me. But it's such a great subject to write about, you know, Norman Granz and segregation in his fight against it, and what he did with jazz at the Philharmonic, and then what he did in starting Clef Records and then Verve. It's a monumental story in jazz.
It really is monumental. And let's go to the central figure, and that is Norman Granz. Look, what is it about him that makes him so special, makes him the guy to take on this challenge?
I think one of the things that makes him so special is the first Jazz at the Philharmonic concert. You know, here's this guy, he's 26 years old. He says, right, we shouldn't just be playing jazz in smoky clubs in Los Angeles. Let's put it in decent locations. And his ambition is such that he hires the Philharmonic Auditorium, you know, more used to having symphony concerts, and puts on in 1944, July, this first Jazz at the Philharmonic concert with Nat King Cole and a host of other names. And it's a sensation. And from that point on, he had this clear vision to take jazz out of the clubs and then tour jazz at the Philharmonic. And his resolve to insist that there would be no segregation at the concerts. There was no segregation on stage. There were black and white musicians. And in the auditorium, he insisted that the audience was totally integrated, which was a massive thing to do in America in 1944. And throughout most of the 50s, it was still going on. He still had those issues when he was putting on his concerts, even in the 50s.
So he's a man of great conviction and the ability to make things happen. I mean, at the age of 25, 26, putting together concerts like that, how on earth was he able to hire the auditorium?
He borrowed the money. I mean, that's the first thing. I think it was $300, which then was a great deal of money.
Yes.
And he borrowed that, and I think the first one actually lost a little bit of money, but he nevertheless soldiered on, and as you say, he had that conviction. And I think one of the key things about Granz is he was a man on a mission. I mean, he did have that absolute drive to achieve what he wanted to, and it made him quite a difficult person to deal with if you were on the business level with him. But musicians loved him because he insisted that they stayed in the same places, they ate in the same restaurants. I think it was Coleman Hawkins said, when you do something with Norman Granz, it's always first class.
Ah, you see. Well, he was obviously a man who loved the music. That was first, that was primary. And he had the strength of character and the toughness to be able to battle it out in times that were so difficult. I mean, the social climate, as you just alluded to, was a very, very difficult time. It was a time of great prejudice, separation, segregation. And yet he was able to fight through this. What's more, set up labels that, in many cases, were recording almost exclusively black jazz musicians.
Yes. I think that's the other, you know, the story of Verve is obviously more than just the story of jazz at the Philharmonic. I mean, he set up Clef in 1947, and then he set up Norgran in the early 50s, and he was recording jazz in an environment that was not conducive to recording jazz. I mean, jazz, you know, the bebop era had come along, and jazz wasn't top of the pile any longer. R&B was incredibly popular. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to you know, Blue Note is the other great jazz label of that era.
Yeah.
And Blue Note in 1950, 51 and 52 was hardly recording. There were a handful of sessions, whereas Granz was recording, I think in 52 he recorded something like 70 sessions. And if you look at the roster of artists, you know, Billie Holiday, Lester Young, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, you know, it is all the great names. And he had that ability to battle against the tide.
Well, he turned superstar talent into household names. And I think we're going to come back to that just after we hear a piece of music called Perdido from what is the companion CD to your book called The Singles Collection. And we're going to go back to a Jazz at the Philharmonic concert from 1947 in New York at the Carnegie Hall with Illinois Jacquet, Flip Phillips, Hank Jones, Howard McGhee, Ray Brown, and Joe Jones. This is Perdido. The Sound of Jazz at the Philharmonic in 1947, and that was Perdido, featuring a star-studded cast, including Illinois Jacquet, Flip Phillips, Hank Jones, Howard McGhee, Ray Brown, and Joe Jones. A star-studded lineup, Richard, and this is what Norman Granz was doing. He was taking these superstar musicians and turning them into recognizable names to the everyday person.
Yes, you know, my contention is, and this was part of the motivation for the book, was that Verve over the years has perhaps not had the recognition and the praise, and this obviously all goes back to Norman Granz ultimately, for what it did to introduce people to jazz. Mm-hmm. I would argue that more people listen to jazz because of Verve Records and Clef before it and Norgran than any other record label, because he made jazz accessible, and by using those superstar names and recording music that people felt, you know, they could listen to, you know, it isn't hard bop, which you know, I love hard bop, but it's not a place to start.
A masterstroke. I mean, he was obviously a brilliant strategist, and I think the music, yes, alluded to and served a popular imperative, but underlying, and well, maybe not just underlying, but absolutely to the fore, the quality of playing, the quality of solos, the quality of production. All of these things are so apparent in these records, because almost everyone you mention is a classic. You just mentioned the Charlie Parker with Strings album. Now, that is an absolute classic. And I remember in the book you quote Norman Granz is saying that Charlie Parker insisted or asked profusely to have strings when he didn't think it was such a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's some the quote like, you know, there isn't a jazz musician I know who doesn't want to play with strings. And, you know, if you go back through the Verve catalogue, at some point or another, everybody plays with strings, yeah. Whether it's Johnny Hodges or Lester Young or Oscar Peterson, and, of course, the singers, and Charlie Parker is probably the best known. But, you know, he made it accessible, yet, as you say, Julian, there was no lack of quality. I mean, we're talking some of the greatest jazz that was recorded.
Well, let's talk about how you organize the book, because you've got a wonderful foreword by the immensely gifted and legendary Herbie Hancock. And Herbie Hancock talks about the importance of Verve as a Blue Note recording artist who later became a Verve recording artist.
Yes, and it was such a treat to talk to Herbie. I was told I'd have 10 minutes with him at 2:15 a.m. our time.
Wow.
He was in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
After an hour, I was kind of trying to wrap the conversation up, and Herbie just kept going.
Wow.
And so that was how we produced the forward. You know, I wrote it, sent it back to Herbie, and he kept wanting to add in more, and I kept having to say, you know, we're running out of space. but he absolutely got the importance of Verve. You know, when he signed to Blue Note in the early 60s there, he was well aware of everything that had gone on in Verve, and he'd listened to that music growing up, and it was so important to his musical career. And as you say, he then signs to Verve later on. He records The River, the Joni Letters, and it becomes only the second jazz album to win a Grammy for Best Album of the Year. Naturally, the first was also on Verve. It was the Getz and Gilberto album.
And we're going to come to that shortly. But I wanted to just talk about how you organize the book, because you've got a whole just smorgasbord of beautiful pictures. You've got the artwork, which really reveals the identity of what we know as Verve. You talk about from Genesis to Revolution, Jazz in the Hallowed Halls, Clef and Norgren, all of which we've sort of touched upon. And then Verve, as it distinguishes itself from decade to decade, in the 50s, in the 60s, and then Verve forever.
Yeah. To me, so often you can fall into that trap when writing a book where the camera goes in too close and everything's close up. I think it's always important to put things in their musical landscape.
Yeah.
And that way you get a sense of what's happening. So the introduction, and throughout the book I've tried to put in there what else was happening around the time, because it's only then that you can see the story in the round.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for writing this comprehensive journey through the world of the sound of America through Verve Records. It is a beautiful book, and I highly recommend it. And before you go, let's just talk a little bit about Getz Gilberto, that Grammy award-winning album for the Album of the Year in 1964.
I mean, a fabulous album. I mean, everybody knows The Girl from Ipanema. I mean, it is that song that comes on and you immediately think summer. But, you know, Getz and had done the album with Charlie Bird a year earlier, and he'd gotten into this bossa nova world, and it for a while, I mean, it absolutely was huge. I mean, there were hit singles in America. It was a sensation, and it remains one of the biggest selling albums in the jazz canon to this day. You put it on and you were transported, and you know, with the World Cup coming up in Brazil, I suspect there's going to be a few hundred thousand more sold.
Well, you called it beautifully there, Richard. This is The Girl from Ipanema. Ding, 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 bing, ding, 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 ding.
coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela, menina que vem e que passa, num doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que um poema. É a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Ah, por que estou tão sozinho? Ah, por que tudo é tão triste? Ah, beleza que existe. A beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha. Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo sorrindo se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking and she passes goes ah. When she walks she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently that when she passes each one she passes goes ah. Oh, but he watched her so sadly. Straight ahead, not at he. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking. And when she passes, he smiles, but she doesn't see.
The Girl from Ipanema from the 1964 album Gets Gilberto. My thanks to Richard Havers for speaking with me. And Verve, The Sound of America is out now and published by Thames and Hudson. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Coming up next, another previously unbroadcast concert track recorded especially for Jazz Lineup on the programme's Free Stage on Saturday the 16th of November at the Claw Ballroom as part of the London Jazz Festival of 2013. Nathaniel Facey's on alto saxophone, Lewis Wright is on vibes, Shaney Forbes is on drums, and we're going to hear bassist Tom Farmer's composition, The Healer. This is Empirical. Thank you. The Sound of Empirical and The Healer, and you can catch them playing the Pizza Express in London, taking part in a series titled The Blue Note Sessions on January the 22nd. And Empirical play compositions from pianist Herbie Hancock's seminal album of 1964, Empyrean Isles. That's at the Pizza Express Jazz Club, Dean Street, Soho in London. Well, virtuoso bassist Avishai Cohen has a brand new album called Alma. He blends lyrical songs drawn from his Israeli heritage and the standard jazz repertoire. He brings in color, adding a string quartet and oboe to his core trio. And the composer and band leader graces British shores soon to play Ronnie Scott's club in February. This is On a Black Horse, Linearity. Thank you. Reconnecting with his roots in classical music, bassist Avishai Cohen, and On a Black Horse, Linearity, from his new album Alma, out on the Parlophone label. And we look forward to speaking with Avishai on Jazz Lineup soon. Now to a slightly smaller unit called Duo Art, from guitar legend Philippe Catherine and bassist Martin Wind. New Folks is the title of the new album, and this is their take on Dexter Gordon's Fried Bananas. Fried Bananas, from guitarist Philippe Catherine and bassist Martin Wind, and a combination they call Duo Art. Their album, New Folks, is out on February the 10th on the ACT label. Our final unbroadcast concert track this evening comes from the European Jazz Orchestra, recorded at the 2013 Stockholm Jazz Festival on the 17th of October. The conductor is Anne-Sophie Sodergvist, and this track features guest vocalist Christine Amparo on their version of the Aretha Franklin hit Think.
Let your mind go and let yourself be free. People walk around playing games, taking scores. Be careful you don't lose yours. Be careful you don't lose yours. Be careful you don't lose.
European Jazz Orchestra and Think by Ted White and Aretha Franklin, recorded at the 2013 Stockholm Jazz Festival. Well, that's almost the end of this week's show. Tonight on Jeffrey Smith's Jazz, a tribute to the late Stan Tracy. And on Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson at 11 p.m. on Monday the 20th, the music of trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith, recorded live at Cafe Otto. That's at 11 p.m. On next week's jazz lineup, Claire Martin has concert music from the Lithuanian band, the Danius Pulauskas Group. I'll sign off tonight with a brand new release from bassist Harold Anderson, drummer Paolo Vinaccia, and Scots saxophonist Tommy Smith. Out on ECM next week, it's the title track, Mirror. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye. Thank you.
That was Mira with Harold Anderson, Paolo Vinaccia and Tommy Smith, ending this week's Jazz Lineup, presented by Julian Joseph and produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade and Lindsay Bell. Next week, Jazz Lineup's here at the earlier time of 4 o'clock. And don't forget that we have more jazz later tonight, as indeed Julian was mentioning. Geoffrey Smith presents a profile of Stan Tracy, who died last month at the age of 86. His various combos, his work with big bands, the lot. It's all there in Geoffrey Smith's Jazz at Midnight tonight. Or if that's just a bit too late for you, don't forget you can hear it on the iPlayer radio for the next 7 days. Well, a very good evening to you from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through our programmes tonight on Radio 3, which continue right now with live music from Manchester. It's time for Radio 3 to go live in concert. On stage, let's join Christopher Cook.
A very warm welcome to Words and Music from a Master's Voice in tonight's concert in the Strauss's Voice series here at the Bridgewater Hall. The Finnish soprano, Soili Isokoski, will be the soloist in three hymns, settings of poetry by Friedrich Hölderlin. And after the interval, the cellist, Stephen Isserlis, is going to tilt at musical windmills in what Strauss called his variations on a theme of knightly character, Don Quixote. And the BBC Philharmonic, conducted by their chief conductor, Juanjo Mena, begin quite literally at the very beginning with one of the most spectacular sunrises, surely, in all Western music, the introduction to Richard Strauss's tone poem, Also sprach Zarathustra. Strauss was completely smitten when he first read Nietzsche's philosophical poem in 1892 while convalescing from an illness that he'd caught that year. 3 years on, and he set to work composing a tone poem from what he'd read, a work that he described as being freely after Friedrich Nietzsche. I meant to convey in music, Strauss wrote, an idea of the evolution of the human race from its origin through the various phases of development, religious as well as scientific, up to Nietzsche's idea of the Superman, who is, of course, a moral Superman and not some murderous thug dressed in black. Zarathustra is a man who makes his own moral laws and without God, who is, of course, for Nietzsche, dead. A master of his own life and its choices, who fearlessly challenges conventional pieties. Also sprach Zarathustra travels from sunrise to night in 9 linked episodes, each of which takes its cue from Nietzsche's poem. So there's Of the Backwoodsman, Of Joys and Passions, The Song of the Grave, The Convalescent, and the Night Wanderer's Song, and so on. At each stage, mankind, portrayed in the music in a 4-note theme in B minor or major, confronts nature, lurking around Strauss's beloved key, C major. And now, please, will you welcome Juanjo Mena to conduct the BBC Philharmonic, led tonight by Yuri Turchinsky, in a performance of Richard Strauss's Also sprach Zarathustra.